As now we move on to visit with our friend Dr. Jeffrey Copin. He is the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. This conversation is sponsored by Northwestern, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Doctor, it's a pleasure. I hope you're well today.
I'm great, John. I hope you're well, too. You know, if I play the Dr. Oz role, we can have you do the Oprah role. What do you think?
Well, let's see. Oprah made Dr. Oz the household name that he is. And today she, when asked about it, says, yeah, that's my bad. She's almost apologetic about launching him onto America. So that says something about her politics and his politics. But I don't know. We'll see what happens tonight on TV. Although it is interesting. Do you know much about the question will be, among other things, the issues themselves, this Fetterman's cognition and ability. After having suffered a stroke, he's not able to speak that well, but his team argues that he's every bit as insightful and intelligent as he was before. Is that a common thing?
Yeah, based on what we know, and I have been following this pretty closely, and, you know, obviously everything I know is from the public, from the public media reports. He gave an interview a couple of weeks ago, John, where it was clear he has something called an auditory aphasia. He just doesn't understand what people say to him. So what was being said to him was being translated into a tablet where he could read the questions. And we do see that in some strokes. It's a specific neurologic damage to the brain where a person has a hard time understanding spoken words, but not written words. First of all, isn't that amazing when you think about the complexity of our brain? And just how different parts do different things, yet our brains are able to work together like they do, like it does. I mean, I'm just constantly amazed by this kind of thing, and I've been seeing it now for over 40 years in my career. But it's extraordinary. It really is.
And is that something that also afflicts older adults? My mom is 88 years old, I think, now, and we know that she is thinking and processing, but she so struggles to get words out sometimes. And then we're kind of trying to fill in the blanks for her, and it's so frustrating for her when the word might be something as simple as cup or dog or coffee, you know?
Yeah, there's different causes for that, including stroke. There are some strokes where people lose their word-finding ability. The word is there, and it sounds like your mom knows what she wants to say, right, Jen?
Yes.
But she just can't get, she can't find the right word.
Yes.
So the dictionary is there, but her mind's ability to reach into the dictionary to find that word and then to be able to pronounce it, that's the limitation. And that's a specific aphasia. And there's certain brain diseases that can cause that problem. And it really is frustrating for people who have it when they know that they do have that issue. So I think this evening it's going to be very interesting to watch how Mr. Fetterman does during the debate, you know, be able to respond. And, you know, the answer to the question, it is certainly possible that his intellect is unchanged. You know, his ability to think through problems, that might be really unchanged. So I think for the voters of Pennsylvania, it's going to be interesting to watch how he does tonight.
We're visiting with Dr. Jeffrey Copin, the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. We spent some time this week and last talking with listeners about their long-haul effects of COVID-19. It was based on a letter I got from a listener who's in their 23rd month of no taste and smell. And I saw in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago a story that was headlined, "We're in Trouble. Study Raises Alarms About the Impacts of Long COVID." I don't know. What do you have to say about the 23rd month listener and the long-term effects of COVID-19?
There are some people who've had COVID infection who have this manifestation of long COVID. I mean, this is a very extreme example. 23 months without smell or taste. Really have to feel for that person. Thankfully, That's not very common to go on that long. That, of course, doesn't help the listener who shared the story with you. We don't yet know what percent of people who've been infected with COVID go on to have long COVID. There's been various reports, some done better than others. I'd like to point out that about 6 weeks ago, there was one report that talked about 40% of people who were infected with COVID had long COVID. And I think I said then, John, on your program, that I thought that that was too high.
Yeah.
Now, this study that I believe you're referencing, the one from Scotland, is talking about 1 in 20 or 5%. So, you know, that's obviously very different. And what the exact number is, we don't know. But we do know that there is a substantial number of people out there who do have symptoms of long COVID.
And they do say it's 1 in 20. It is the Scottish report I'm referring to. If I've gone, though, 12, 18, 23 months without taste or smell, am I going to get it back?
I hope so. And that's the best I can say.
Wow.
This is uncharted territory for us right now.
Oh, boy, that it would be hard to me imagine damage so permanent, so comprehensive that you're 2 years without taste and smell. What's going to change that it's going to come back?
I think we have to have trust in our neurological system, our senses. There are other infections that have caused prolonged loss of taste and smell, and people do get their taste and smell back. Huh. Whether that will happen here, we don't know, but that has happened in people, Jen, after 2 years with other infections.
Wow. Boy, what a miracle that must be for those people one day. I think I've told you before, my mom has no taste or smell, and she's had dreams about eating strawberries and can remember what that would be like, and then she wakes up and realizes she can't. Boy, if you would wish something for somebody, wish that for them, because it's such a loss, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, John, and also it really should prompt all of us to feel so thankful about what we do have, right? You know, we've already talked about aphasia, auditory, expressive aphasias, loss of sense, you know, the loss of the sense of smell or taste. For those of us that have these things, let's not take it for granted. Let's just feel very appreciative that we have it. And that's really where we get down to what can we do for ourselves to keep ourselves healthy for as long as we can. I think that's one of the most important lessons that we can garner from this whole experience.
Well, that does remind me of an article that was in The Atlantic. In fact, the pub date is October 24th, yesterday. And in there, it's headlined, "The Great Pandemic Handwashing Blooper." And they said, "We've discovered that handwashing wasn't the principal means by which we would or wouldn't get COVID-19. And then they asked this question, "If handwashing is not as important as we thought it was in March of 2020, how important is it at all?" Doctor, what do you say about that? Dr. Copen from Northwestern's Lake Forest Hospital is on a phone line. Doctor, how important is hand washing then if that's not principally how COVID-19 was spread?
John, do what your mother taught you to do when you were a little boy. Wash your hands. Wow. Although it turned out that hand transmission of the COVID virus was not as important as it was considered perhaps to be back in March and April of 2020. We know that washing hands keep us from getting sick from other things. There are plenty other bugs out there, both viruses and bacteria, that we get rid of and decrease the risk of getting infected from when we wash our hands. So please, wash your hands. You don't have to wash your hands like we did back in March and April. I don't know about you, John, but my hands actually got raw from all the alcohol-based hand cleanser I was using. Yeah. Back then, I was happy to stop doing that. But washing hands is critically important for our health, and people should not stop doing it.
Well, the flu is like the COVID-19, right? Like if I'm worried about flu season, a hand washing is a good idea. I hear you, but that's probably not how I'm going to get the flu, right?
Yeah, in most instances, flu, the influenza virus, just like the COVID virus, is a respiratory virus. We get it from breathing the air, and that's part of the reason why influenza can be so infectious, not dissimilar from our experience with COVID. It's kind of funny, isn't it, that now we're using COVID as an example when we describe influenza.
Well, how does that relate to RSV? Is RSV, that's principally spread through the air as well?
Yes, so that's another respiratory virus. And thank you for bringing that up. Last week I mentioned, John, that our hospitals are full of kids who have respiratory virus, not COVID, RSV, or something called an enterovirus, another virus that can be a respiratory virus and cause respiratory illness. And that continues. This has been a real challenge for the hospitals in the area, really most parts of the country. So we're trying to deal with that. The good news is we learned a lot from dealing with COVID that we're now applying to RSV and this enterovirus and the way we're thinking about taking care of kids.
Okay, doctor, will you always take care of us? As always, thanks for your time. And will you join us next Tuesday as well, sir?
I look forward to it. And go Bears after last night.
About, tell me how that happened, Mr. Smart Guy.
I'll leave that to, you know, Ed Obradovich and the other experts. All I can say is, probably like you, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, amen to that. Dr. Jeffrey Copen, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern's Lake Forest Hospital. Thanks, Doc.
Bye-bye.